So, we are talking about the Eightfold Path, which is the path that is actually a circle. Oh, we're not started yet.
Okay.
I'm just doing an intro.
Okay.
For all of you. You can be included, but especially for you guys. The Eightfold Path is actually a circle. It's not a straight line. Why?
Say that again, I missed it.
The Eightfold Path is actually a circle,
okay,
not a straight line. Why? Have you ever learned anything the first time you tried? When you rode a bicycle, did you get it on the first time, just like that?
I don't remember.
Immediately did a 5-mile race.
Nope. No, I didn't do it the first time.
No. How many times do you have to do something until you don't, until you remember?
Yeah.
And sometimes some things you remember very quickly and some things you don't remember very quickly. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So it's true of the Eightfold Path. You have to go over and over and over the same 8 steps until they start coming from your heart. Does that make sense?
Okay.
We never learn anything on the first time. You know, first, what is it? 2 or 3 years of our lives, we're learning how to watch our parents' faces so we know how to interpret emotion. I don't know about you, but I love seeing babies in parents' arms in supermarkets. Because what I do is immediately I look at them and I go, And I go. And then pretty soon they're going.
Yeah.
Because that's how you learn, by aping. So the first little while of your life, you really need that time to take in data, then your brain starts sorting it out. Then you know something, then there's an I. There isn't really an I until we're about 3 or 4. Which is why it's so hard to remember things that, unless they're traumatic, we can remember our parents telling us or our brothers and sisters telling us that we did when we were 2 or something, but our own memories, because there's no I who's got, you know, the index card and knows where everything is sorted. It's just taking in data. So the Eightfold Path is like the I learning how to add new data. And it takes, like, sometimes 2 or 3 years, 2 or 3 lifetimes.
Well, you mean there's hope.
Always. That's the bottom line. There's always hope. So in order to start aware with awareness, practicing the Eightfold Path, you need to feel like there's some kind of refuge you want. You really got to see that you keep chasing things. Any of you in this room do that? One or two of us. One or two. Not auto, but that's okay. We know you. So in order to take refuge, there has to be a sense of, in a way, seeing how your desire is never ending and how repetitive it is. Can you all see that about yourselves? That there's always a tendency, certain things trigger you and certain things you just don't even see. Is that true? I was so busy watching the car that was coming too close to me because I don't like speeding, you know. I go over the speed limit because I was born in Alberta, but I don't like speeding. And I was watching it wasn't until I was passing it that I saw the little deer at the side of the road, just ready to step on the highway and then looking. I didn't see it before because I was too busy. Where was my focus? That damn car is too close over there. I missed the beauty that was there. Any of you ever do that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. Once or twice? So you can see there comes a point where you can develop that as a habit, worrying. Is that true?
Yep.
Or thinking, oh, I shouldn't have, or next time I'm going to, or blah, 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 all about as if you could change past and future by going into the past or future instead of being in the present. And when you actually start looking for refuge, you realize you want to be here. When you want to be here, you want to see what that means to you. What is it you want about here? So if you were going to take refuge, what would be your object right now? Would it be a sense of ease? Would it be a sense of already knowing the answer? Would it what would be your object of refuge?
The breath.
The breath? How to just be focused on the breath?
It's just relaxing to the breath.
And so why you would do that is to relax. And who is it that needs to relax? Isn't that an interesting question? So what you want to do is like identify the object of refuge. I want to relax. See that sense of what, slight anxiousness or trying to get something right or trying to be safe, or, you know, we have a thousand reasons, don't we, to try to relax. Itch. And then who is it that is trying rather than being? Then you can say, okay, am I making sense here? Mm-hmm. Is this interesting to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you can say, actually, I'd like to feel that relaxation is already present and I'd like to open to it. So then you know you're taking refuge in relaxation because it's already present. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then your mind opens, doesn't grab for refuge. So here we are sitting here, and we're going to take refuge. So what about if you open your mind to feel what's already present? And feel it's like a support. Your back is supported by space. Your bum is supported by the space between each of the little cells in it, and the space in the cushion and the space in the floor. Your arms, your legs, everything. There's like this opening of spaciousness. You feel that. And you think, this is like a refuge of being present. This is like Buddha nature. And then you open yourself to that, and you say, in the Buddha, having a sense yourself personally of what that means. In the Buddha, can't hear you.
In the Buddha.
In the Buddha, the Dharma, which means the teaching. And the excellent assembly, which means the Sangha, the people around, whether they're here at the class or I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Or you say, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama. Sambuddhas. Namo, I name Tassa, the state, Bhagavato of blessedness, Arahato, freedom, Sama, fully, Sambuddhasa, with the present, with openness. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato. So that's what refuge is. Is that useful?
Yes.
You want to see why you're taking refuge, don't you? Most of the time, it's not because we're present in the moment. It's because then you see what it is you're habitually grabbing at. There's always something. I mean, you know, I'm normal, so you must be doing the same thing. But can you see it? That's what steps outside of normal, doesn't it? To see it. Then you actually have a choice. It isn't that we get rid of anything. It's that we are riding the horse. The horse isn't riding us. We don't just get taken by it. We say, oh yeah, I see you want to go over there, but we're going this way. Or this way. Maybe this way.
I don't know.
So that's what the Eightfold Path is about. It's about learning over and over again how to hold your mind steady, regardless of the thoughts, regardless of the habits, regardless of the emotions, how to be able to see them as they are. That's the power. So the first step of the Eightfold Path is what? Nobody been to any of these classes?
It starts with fright.
Huh?
It starts with fright.
Didn't hear you.
It starts with fright.
With right, it does start with right. Excellent then. And then what's the next word? Sometimes it's understanding, sometimes it's view. It can be right view, right understanding. I prefer right understanding. And there are two kinds of right understanding, aren't there?
Yes.
One is the relative, which I talked about already, learning to ride the bicycle. You do it over and over and over again. Every time, it's like first a seed is planted, then a little bit of water drops on the seed, then a little more, and one time it comes out of the ground. So what happens when we do something and then we realize we didn't want to do it, most of the time, living in this wonderful culture of grabbing for right, we think, oh, I should have remembered that, don't we? Oh, how could I have done that again? Is that the same thing as watering the seed, or is that trying to dig up the seed and throw it away because it didn't grow when you thought it should? Which is it? It's more like the second, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's not saying, oh, I'm glad to see that. Oh, I'm glad to see that. Oh, I'm glad to see that. Not, please, self-criticism. There's enough people in the universe or multiverse, animals, whatever, amoebas, that can criticize me better than I will ever do it myself. Why would I bother doing something that I'm already surpassed at and I'm not even interested in? Why wouldn't I water the seed of the positive? Does this make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
So right understanding starts with having a seed planted. You know what you don't want to do again. And then you do it again. And then, oh, right. Oh, I just did it again. Maybe now, I hope next time I remember. I don't want to do that. I don't like this that happens for me. And then next time, maybe you remember again. Like maybe the next day. Maybe a year later, it doesn't matter. The seed is getting watered. So we have to get the judge out of the way and become a lover. Of whom? Not me. Ourselves. We have to give ourselves the right, like a little child learning something new. We have to give ourselves permission to unknow and want to know. None of us know everything, do we? Do you know everything? I mean, you're good, but... Do you know everything?
No.
Oh, son of a gun. Do you? Well, I'm not going to ask you. You? I'll be you. Okay, you?
No, I know.
You. Me neither. Do I want to know everything? One part of me does, but not really. Because then, you know, where do I get to see the Grand Canyon for the first time?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Where do I get to see the sun as it's setting just by the clouds and we're driving over here? Where, oh my gosh. Where I get to see a new face or an old face and see it new for the first time. Where does that happen? There's no space for it, is there? Is there? If you're trying to do something right, you're stopping your heart from growing. You know that from the way you teach art. Mm-hmm. If you just let it come from you, it's different than...
Right.
It's beautiful, isn't it? So that whole quality of like watering the seed and watering the seed and watering the seed. I don't think we're going to get the last one this week. We were going to do the last one tonight, but I don't think we're going to get there. It's like the first part of right view or right understanding. And then the second part, the second step of the first part, is called having the realization, the seed sprouts. You see, oh, you're about to do it, and you go, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. Now it's become something you prefer. It's not something you're teaching yourself. You've watered the seed. It's already growing. You appreciate it. And we all know that experience too, don't we? Mm-hmm. When it's a red light, get your foot off the gas pedal. Right. Thank you. Oh, wait. Oh, red light. Oh. Eventually, we see the light changing and we start slowing down. That's the first level of right view or right understanding. The second level is what happens once you have gone through the first cycle of the Eightfold Path. It's the second level is the Four Noble Truths. Right understanding. First, there is dissatisfactoriness. No matter where you are, what you're doing, there's all when you breathe out, you have to breathe in. You breathe in, you have to hold your breath long enough for the oxygen, and then you got to breathe out. You can, but it doesn't work. Everything is changing, everything is moving all the time. Trying to get something into the right place is like already it's shifted, hasn't it? There is dissatisfactoriness. Always, continuously. There is a cause for dissatisfaction. There is an end to dissatisfactoriness. There is a way to the end. The path, Eightfold Path. That's the second level. When you start to realize that the path you have walked on is actually giving you more insight into the moment. Seeing yourself dissatisfied rather than letting it run you. Beautiful, isn't it? Somehow or other, just putting a curb on your latent tendencies, or not so latent, some of them. Like me, my ridiculous sense of humor. Not so latent, wouldn't you say? Come on, laugh at that one. Yes, you can do. What's wrong? Am I talking loud enough, Otto? My voice dropped, didn't it?
How difficult.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. I do. I apologize. You're accepting my apology?
It's not you, it's me.
Oh. No, no, it's not you, it's me. Oh, no. Oh, man. You're such an imp. Isn't he?
He sure is.
He's an imp. At least you're blushing, that's something. So that's right view, right understanding. Is that good? Right thought? Do you remember that one? Total silence.
Motivation.
The aspiration to... Let's see how I wrote it down here.
To be present.
To cease to do the negative. To cease to do evil.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They say, cease to do the negative. That's what you're learning with the first one, isn't it? How to actually practice kindness in the moment. When you do it to yourself, then the right thought comes up. Then it automatically goes to others. We cannot be kind to others with an open heart unless we're kind to ourselves. We can't give to ourselves unless we give to others. We can't give to others unless we give to ourselves. They're totally interdependent. We know that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
You've all seen that. You know when you give to somebody else wanting something for yourself. You've seen that, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen when somebody else gives to you wanting for themselves, haven't you? You've seen that. You see yourself giving to yourself and then feeling guilty and finding fault with the others. Any of you ever see that? Well, one or two of us. Is this making sense?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a concrete example.
When someone wants to give something to somebody else, but they don't want you to know. So they give money to a kid or something, but they don't tell you. Instead, they find something you did wrong.
Okay.
You know that example?
I guess so, yeah.
So they give to them, give what they want to, because they want that person to love them. But then they feel guilty, then they blame you.
I see, okay.
So they find what you're doing wrong.
Okay.
I was very good at that one. I think I would have won Miss Universe prize in that one when I was young and stupid. Now I'm old and stupid. At least I know when I'm stupid. It's a little bit better. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So cease to do evil means both those things. You don't give wanting something, and you don't not give and give to yourself and then attack someone else. Is that true? Does that put a different light on it? Learn to do good means you have to practice kindness across borders, inner and outer. Those are the only borders we really have, aren't they? Purify the mind. Oh, that's interesting. Of what? Of duality, of good and evil. Be in the moment. Don't make rules. But then who will I be? Is that true? Don't you have rules?
Oh, yeah.
One or two.
Or three or four.
Purify the mind so that you actually can continue to be in the moment. You can be unknowing. You know, the Christian mystics, it was one of the things they would do that was so beautiful to me when I read. I used to really love the Christian mystics when I was in my early teens. Because what they would do is they'd go somewhere and they'd say, thou, thou, thou. Not I want you, you. Thou, beyond what I know. Thou. Beyond the duality of me and the object. Thou. What is nirvana? Nirvana is transcending subject-object duality. Isn't that almost unimaginable? Except maybe one of the first times you really saw the northern lights filling the whole sky, and it's like, there isn't any subject-object, is there? Or an orgasm. There isn't any subject-object, is there? There's just that. There's awareness, there's presence, but there isn't a whole bunch of little labels and crossing out lines and putting stars on other ones. And, you know, yes and knowing. It's just open, present. Does that make sense?
Isn't the loving kindness practice a form of thou? Like when you just take it out and out and out and out till it's the entire universe?
It's like training the mind to go beyond, to change object from fixity to expansion. More sympathetic joy is thou. Seeing, you know, the propensity for beauty and everything. Sympathetic joy is when you can watch somebody make a total mess of their life and think they're doing a really good job of it. Wow, you've got a really interesting learning path. You do. You're doing it really well. I'm so happy for you. Sympathetic joy is like when love is gone beyond I.
Beyond any judgment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's still a subtle liking of that state of sympathetic joy. There's still a subtle preference for it. It's one of the reasons why I like drugs and sex, the two things that took me out of my body. So then the last one of the four, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, is letting go of subject-object. So that if pain happens, you see it as a feeling and you see the emptiness of it. If pleasure happens, you see it as a feeling and you see the emptiness of it. You see it as impermanent. So you see everything as a dance. There's nothing separate from thou-ness. And there is no I involved in that awareness. Is that helpful? See, I'm not going to get through the last one today. I haven't even gone through. This is going on and on. I thought I could teach the Eightfold Path really quickly. It's been going, how long, many months have we been doing this? So where were we? Oh yeah, cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the mind. Of what? Right and wrong. Of duality. And then, thusness. This is the teaching. Thou is the teaching of the Buddhists. Beyond subject-object is the teaching of the Buddhists. Nibbana. Gone out. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Gone out is the teaching of the Buddhists. So that's right thought. The aspiration to cease to do evil, the aspiration to learn to do good, the aspiration to purify the mind, and the aspiration of transcendence. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints yet? Right speech. Abstaining from slander. What does slander mean? When you slant a story to make you look good, or somebody you think should be looking good, and you negate someone else, you choose a political party, or, you know, anything like that. In a way, it's slander because it's based on our own experiences, but not actually our own experiences, on how we remember our experiences when that situation comes up. I don't know if that makes sense. Have you ever been in a hate state? Because I see a show of hands on that one.
Ever been what?
Have you ever been in a hate state?
Hate state.
Yeah. Could I see a show of hands on that? Okay, everybody's got their hand up. Yeah. Okay. When you looked at something that usually you wouldn't mind, did you like it when you were in a hate state? I wish they'd take that stupid picket fence down. It's like rotting out. They should. Why don't they? Have you ever been in a love state?
I can't remember.
That's the problem with love. It's just open. It's hard to read itself. That means yes. When you look at the picket fence, don't you think, gee, I wonder who built that? It's lasted a long time. Same picket fence, depends on who's looking from here. Sometimes you're happy to get a phone call from somebody. Sometimes you're really pissed off that they would phone you at this hour. Is that true?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're glad you missed the bus. Sometimes you're, the bus is there. Is that true? Mm-hmm. So who's the real self? You know, whenever we're doing slander, we're feeding the negative, aren't we? Mm-hmm. We're trying to make ourselves better than something. So that self doesn't need aggrandizement. It's already pretty good at it. Would you say that's true?
Yes.
Every mind state is a different self. So that's basically what the opposite of right speech, the opposite of slander, due to the aspiration to promote concord. To like have a different view, but not make that view more important than somebody else's view. Why wouldn't there be a different view, but why wouldn't you appreciate somebody else's view and try to see where they're coming from? Wouldn't that be learning something for yourself? Wouldn't that give you more power of having a choice about which self is ruling? Is my voice loud enough now?
Hmm.
Yeah. If you actually had a choice about whether or not you were promoting concord, you know, good faith with others,
okay,
then why would you have a... Why would you do slander? You wouldn't.
Right.
You would allow yourself to have a different view, but you would be interested in the other person's view too.
Right.
Is that true? That would promote concord. Say, well, we're just different sides of the triangle. Together we make up the shape. Does that make sense? I'm not sure.
I don't know where the triangle came in.
Out of my brain. You know, a triangle has different sides.
Yeah.
But we're just part of the same, each side is a part of the same shape.
Right.
So you can have different views, different sides.
Right.
But you can still be creating a shape that depends on each other.
Right. Structure.
Yeah. The structure of society. My beautiful native teacher, Frank Lacoste, used to teach me all the time about the importance of the group coming together and discussing something without telling each other their opinions, but sitting there and talking about their background. So they weren't saying, this is my opinion, or this is my opinion. But when you listened to their background, you could hear what their beliefs were and why. So that you opened your mind to their experience.
That's brilliant.
It is brilliant, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
That's so beautiful, that you actually open yourself to another person's experience, rather than thinking that there's a right or a wrong. I mean, there's a right or wrong for me, depending on the mood that creates the me. But that's quite changeable, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Unless I feel insecure about my identity, then I'm going to have a fixed view and I'm going to state it all the time. Is that true?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure, you know, what would happen if I lost that view? Tightrope, tightrope. If I don't have my views, where will I be standing?
And I'm a man, too.
Hey, right, exactly.
I had to put that in, I'm sorry.
I love it. You know, I love you. That's your problem, being a man. I have a problem. Sorry, what?
Just what you're talking about, they're dancing with that stuff so all the time, you know.
We all do, Otto. All of us are dancing with that stuff all the time. Trying to figure out how to agree when you don't agree. Is that true?
Yeah.
Why do you think you should agree? Why wouldn't you think we're different sides of the same shape? Why wouldn't you think that? Why wouldn't you think, oh, it's nice that we have so many different views? That's what I learned from my beloved teacher, Frank Lacoste, that when the tribe, when the group got together and they sat, you know, they sat together in a circle, always in a circle, and everybody spoke when they wanted to, and they just spoke from their hearts. They weren't talking to anyone.
Yeah.
They were presenting a side. That you understood why they leaned that way, there was no judgment. It was just opening your mind to greater understanding. Isn't that beautiful?
That's a refuge, isn't it? Kind of.
It sure is.
Mm-hmm.
It's trust.
Yeah.
Which is refuge, isn't it? It's a beautiful way to put it. Thank you.
Okay.
That was hard to accept, wasn't it?
I'm going to blush again.
Oh, goody. Oh, you are now. Thank you. That's very kind of you. Thank you. I don't know if we'll even get through the first five. This is taking forever, you guys. You know, I can write them out really fast. It's all by myself. Full of your questions. So, cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the mind, dwell in thusness. Right speech, the opposite of slander due to the aspiration to promote concord. Isn't that beautiful? The aspiration to the opposite of harsh speech. Harsh speech is the second one of right speech. Do the opposite of harsh speech or affection, finding something you like about, you know, you can like why somebody is such a good liar if you really listen to their story, can't you? You can really appreciate why that was important for their survival, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard many survival stories? Yes. And when you hear somebody's survival story, doesn't that give you a different view of them? I found that.
a little more appreciation of them. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So that's like the opposite of harsh speech, affection. Not trying to tell somebody according to your experience whether they're right or wrong. Or does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Having affection for how many different facets there are in any one person, let alone a community. It's amazing. Who knew that the young Trudeau smoked pot?
My brother did.
Who cares?
I bet Pierre did. Probably gave him his first toke. And the third one of right speech is the opposite of idle chatter. Like not just going like I seem to be doing tonight. You know people who do that. Of course, none of us do we? No.
Yeah, we're all beyond that.
Yeah.
I have a license.
Except for two of you, but we're not going to point any fingers here. Well, maybe four of you. Okay, five.
Well, the Twitterverse has that quality. The Twitterverse has that quality. And online chatting does too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the comment page on when you're online is just unbelievable. Yeah. Just saying it for the sake of saying something.
I know. I think I told you that I joined Facebook because Jeff wanted me to look at his postings from his trip to South America. And within a week, I had over 200 invitations to join. I'm going, let me out of here. And I know what they are. They're all like, oh, and then I fed the squirrels some pecans or, you know, whatever. I bought a new blouse. Well, good. Did you give it to the Salvation Army? And, you know, like, yeah, it's a real
sucks your energy, sucks your attention, sucks your.
But that's the point. Yeah. That's the point.
Like the bathroom prince gone global.
Amen. That's a very good description. Did you hear that?
Well, no. It's like the backyard fence gone global. Like talking, you know, idle chatter over the fence to your neighbor, you know, just because they're standing there.
Yeah. But now it's like a global reach. Yeah. You can twit with anybody. Be a twit with anybody. I'm such an old lady. So that's right speech, right action. To abstain from killing and harming. I undertake to train myself to restrain from killing and harming. I told you about that when I was a nun in Thailand. You know, you had to do that every month. You had to chant certain sutras together as a group and then retake the precepts every month, just before full moon, the day before full moon. And doing it that often, and also sometimes you had to do it once a week, depending on which monastery you were in or whether you were on retreat or what, you know. One time I decided to see if it was possible to live without killing and harming. Now, when it's the rainy season in Thailand, so a lot of ants looking for a place to live. There's a lot of fish swimming through the monastery grounds because there's rivers everywhere. And then it dries up quite quickly. And then there's all these fish, and they can't pick them all up and run to the nearest river with them, because by the time you get seven there, three of them have died. And it's impossible to miss that ant without killing that one. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible to pour boiling water in a cup without killing a bunch of bacteria. It's not possible to eat something without destroying some kind of life. I came to the conclusion that it's not about the action, it's about the motive. I wish to not kill and harm. And meanwhile, I'm also reading through the whole of the sutras of the Buddha, because some monk had lived at the temple I was at and had bought the entire Tipitaka. So it was in English. So it was really nice that I could read through the end. You know, I was a nun, so I could read the entire Tipitaka. And it was free, and I could take the books to my cabin, and if I woke up in the middle of the night, I could light my candle and peer the small print in the darkness. And the interesting thing was to see that really many times in the Buddha's teaching, he said, it's not the action, it's the motive that is important. So when you take the precepts to abstain from killing and harming, you're trying to create the motive of not causing death and not causing harm. You're not going to do it out there. Otherwise, you got to stop breathing, stop swallowing, stop shitting. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Something is always dying, isn't it? Something's always being reborn, isn't it? Are we going to stop that cycle of change? We're going to stop our feeding into it in a negative way. Yes. I undertake to train myself to refrain from killing and harming, from the motive of causing harm or causing death. That's different, isn't it? That's actually possible. I wish to train my mind to kindness. I undertake to train myself to abstain from lying, false speech. Why? Because whenever you lie, you're trying to make yourself safe. You're denying the truth of change. Are you the same as you were when I walked in the door? When you sat down on that cushion? When we were turning on the lights? When I was talking about the last one? 2 seconds before I asked you? There's this kind of continuous shifting and changing. And when we use false speech, we're denying the most important truth, the adaptability of life. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. The adaptability, how life is continuously open to change and shift. Or you can call it the continuous nature of death, if you want, because in order for something to shift, something has to let go.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We don't like thinking about it that way, of course. I'm actually in for change. I'm not trying to kill anything. I'm nice. So when we're lying, we're negating the thing that is most important to all existence, change. We're trying to create a fixed identity. Either someone else or us. One of the two. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a good idea. So I undertake to train myself from taking that which is not freely given. Do you ever know people who try to give you things that you know they don't freely want to let go of? If you're greedy for the thing, you'll grab it, won't you? If you're seeing the person, you might say, you know, it's really beautiful, but I really don't have space for it right now. Do you mind keeping it for longer and please appreciate it? Does that make sense? I try to make sense. If not dollars, at least cents. To refrain from taking that which is not freely given. Alms round. Life is going on alms round. I undertake to train myself from immoral sexual conduct, like with children, with those who are married or those who are engaged, or with never did the Buddha mention homosexuality as being wrong. Never did he mention that having intercourse if you weren't married was wrong. Never did he mention those things. But what he did mention were those three particularly. Underage, someone who was attached.
So, was it abuse of that?
Pardon me?
Abusiveness.
It is.
Yeah.
Letting your desire rule you.
But there's a lot of that going on, I think.
I notice that there's not a lot of people who take the vows seriously in our world. I don't think many politicians do. That could be my bias, you understand. It's possible.
It seems to be that way. It's always in the paper.
Otto, we agree. So, okay. My next one is right livelihood, which is talks about the purity of livelihood. What is the purity of livelihood? Fulfill one's obligations as much as one is able. Not more, not less. That's a really hard one. They all require a certain personal honesty, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
They all put us back in, like, actually look, checking in and out equally. And in fact, that's what all of them are about. All of the Eightfold Path is about seeing the equality of inner and outer. Because as soon as you do that, you're no longer grasping to a fixed identity. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you're no longer grasping to a fixed identity, your heart opens. How beautiful. Isn't it? When our hearts are open, we don't have to be right. We're just lovers. Is that true? So that's right livelihood. Fulfill one's obligations as much as one is able. Right effort? Now this one is like basically like breath meditation. When you're watching your breath, sometimes does your mind wander?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes? It does. But are you normal? So when you're sitting there and then you feel an itch, and then you hear a sound of a hum, you think, oh, is there a mosquito in here, don't you? Or something like that, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you immediately look for an insect or... So immediately, your mind has taken a sense perception and made it into an outer object. So then there's an eye who's looking for the object. So what you have to do is go, oh, there's a feeling. Please let yourself yawn. I really like people to open their mouths and let her gape, because that relaxes the jaw. You should hear me on with Daisy. I'm just like, she tries not to yawn. I throw my slippers at her. Don't I?
Yep.
I'm just relentless with her. Last night, she let herself yawn like 6 times in a row, and she only tried to cover up one of them. I was like, so proud. Yeah. Ah, oh, thank you, Don. Yeah, I'm a little different than some teachers. I don't mind yawns at all. That's like something in the jaw letting go.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing a thought or a feeling as it arises and knowing when like, dislike, or neutral are present. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
Where you see it and you watch your reaction. You don't let yourself run. Don't let yourself be pulled away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, that is a very interesting idea for right effort. It's not about forcing your mind back and not thinking, because that's not right effort. That's dictatorship. That's not freedom. That's not allowing yourself to be present and still maintaining the ability to develop concentration. That's like having to have a perfect little shrine room complete with completely soundproofed walls and the perfect Buddha that nobody can come into because it's holy, yet blessed by whichever teacher you particularly prefer or whichever lineage. And you sprinkled it with holy water and you take a bath before you come in and put talc on yourself to make sure you smell good. That is not right effort, is it? No way, Jose. No way. Right effort is being able to see all of the sense doors and the sense objects, but not go there. You don't have to be blind, deaf, and dumb. That was when one of the sutras in the Sutta Pitaka, where the Buddha, somebody is telling him that their teacher said that you should stop yourself from seeing, stop yourself from hearing. And so the Buddha said to him, so when someone is blind and deaf, then they're enlightened? And the guy went, no. Well, what's the point? It's when you have control of the mind that matters. It's not distracted driving. It's driving with both hands on the wheel, seeing back and forth at the same time, open to the moment. Not trying to change all the traffic around you so you don't have to, but being able to respond and be present. Is that a good analogy?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing, I like this part, and knowing when like, dislike, and neutral. Those are there are 5 feelings in the 5 aggregates. The feeling aggregate has 5 qualities. Like, dislike, and neutral mind, pleasure, pain, body. Those are the five feelings. So it's the mind you want to watch. Oh, I like this. Oh, I dislike this. Oh, this is neutral. I'm just going to blank it out. It doesn't exist. It's not important. And neutral, and one of my teachers told me neutral was the hardest one to see. Because it's just an eraser. A wipeout, you know? Let's wipe out. Oh my God. We're back to where we were last night. Right mindfulness. Appamadena Sampadeja. Deja. Those were the last words of the Buddha before he left his body. Strive on with diligence for the benefit of all beings. Strive on with diligence. Great mindfulness. Why is that important? Because if you're diligent, you allow yourself to see the whole of the Eightfold Path. You see yourself when you're in right view and when you're not in right view. You see yourself when you're in right thought and you're not in right thought. You see yourself when you're in right speech and you're not in right speech. And you don't blame yourself. You just note it and say, oh, back to the path. Oh, back to the path. Oh, I'm glad I learned that. Back to the path. Self-criticism is like any form of masochism. It just leaves you with bruises and you're still hungry for more. When you torture yourself, don't you just look forward to the next time you can do it better? Isn't it one of the biggest problems with all the commercials and everything in our society? Isn't that sick? It's relentless. And you watch young kids like just going through it, like why they're bullies or, you know. Because they don't know how much fun it is to be a lover. Because you're supposed to always try to be. Instead of trying being. Why don't we try being? So you know what? It's like 7 minutes over time. You got any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I guess next time I come, which will be in not next month, but the month after, we still have to do the last one. Maybe we'll get it done.
My concentration.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would anybody feel like listening to that?
It is longer than all of them.
Okay.
It's beautiful, but I'm not going to do it tonight. We would be here until after midnight, and I'm not going to stay that late. You're welcome. If you want. Go on. It'll be on tape. You know that these are all recorded, eh? And on the net. Did you know that?
Where's the recorder?
I will tell you about it after.
All my swearing and throwing things at people. It's all there. People seem to enjoy it. Huh? They don't come here, but they listen. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints other than am I going to do right concentration? I know the last one.
It was a good question.
It's a beautiful question. The answer is yes, but not tonight. Do you find it interesting going through them again and again?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of like little drops of water going in?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like that.
Right view. We learn by repeating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that we don't allow ourselves that, isn't it? Because we know that, you know. My sister, you know, was one of my sister who died when she was 48, Gerda. She had an ear, perfect pitch ear for music. So we would go for music lessons. She and I, my mother would send us to this woman who happened to be a nun who used to hit your knuckles if she didn't like the way you were playing or the way you were holding your hands. So after the first three lessons, my sister would not get off the bus with me, but tell me that she would meet me, that I should catch such and such a bus, and she'd go downtown and spend the money, that we each had the money for our own class. And I would, you know, being... I would go to the class, and I'd get whacked a few times on the knuckles. And then I'd get on the bus, and Gerda would be there, and we'd ride home. And as soon as we got home, Gerda would run in the front door, in the door, and say, "Mom, it was a really good lesson. Cecily's supposed to practice first." So I would sit there and go, and then eventually a few times she would hear what it was supposed to be. And then it was her turn and she'd do it perfectly. She couldn't read music. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
She had this talent for it that was like, but it was a hearing. She had to hear it. She had to hear me practicing. And then it was, right. So even though whatever it was in her that could remember the sound of something, she had to learn. She used to watch me a certain amount to see which keys I was hitting. And then by the time she'd done that a few times, she knew which keys it were. So she could go outside and still hear me. And I didn't have that talent. So I'm like, and I'm waiting for the stick to come down on my knuckles.
It's like a three-dimensional talent.
It is,
isn't
it?
To see you and hear you.
Yeah.
It's spatial, interesting.
Yeah. Remember the science of the senses, hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Music lights up more of the brain than anything else. More neurons go... Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Sight is the premier one. But music is the one that takes us into bliss the most, makes us happiest. So I guess that's why so many people chant or say sing songs when they want to practice mysticism of some type. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? None, Miss Kathy?
No.
Then you can tell me about the Eightfold Path next time. You okay, Otto? Sorry for you too?
Aye.
I was just asking that nice young man behind you whether it was okay for him too. Okay?
Yes.
So you notice this extremely lovely, tingly gold light in your heart. Just tingling away. Right in the center of your body. It's like this little, even more than a candle glow, like a star that's on a really clear prairie night out of the city. And it's like, or maybe up in the mountains somewhere, seeing. And it just shines up through your shoulders and down to your hips, out through your ribs in the back and your back in the back. And the front ribs in the front, and your back in the back, and down your arms, and down your legs, and up your head, and out your ears, out the top of your head, and out your feet. It just shines, fills this room, all of us together, this house. just spreads through the neighborhood and, you know, just gets everything all through the ground, up into the sky. All of Edmonton just got, wow, gold lighted. Moves through all of Alberta, moves through all of North America, moves right through the Northern Hemisphere, right through the planet, moves out into space. It just goes out, this beautiful light, beautiful light. It's the speech body. Our speech body, the emotional body, extends according to Buddhist tradition 7,000 miles in every direction. 7,000, so 3,500 miles in every direction. It just spreads out. Sometimes it's less than that, but that's my favorite number. And so every speech body that it hits, it starts vibrating the same emotion. You know, when you say prayers, it just moves out. So this is what this does. It just moves through everywhere, and this light just shines. You feel everybody picking it up. You don't close your eyes. You just leave them open, and you just let yourself feel your body shining. And wherever there is suffering, you just... ignorance, pain, misfortune of body, speech, or mind. It's just temporarily washed, just washed by this light. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. And next week, maybe we'll, next time I come, maybe we'll get to the last one.
We can start at the end and go to the beginning.
Oh, there's a concept. Yeah, because, but the end one actually talks about the beginning.